Sorry. All right. Okay, so I guess we should probably get started. It's 11:30. Thanks everyone for coming. First of all, I'm super impressed you could find Lagoon B. That's pretty cool. I almost didn't find it myself, so congratulations on being in the right place. Just so you guys know, you are in the right place. This is a session on mobile web development with IE9. I'm Joe Marini. I am not Joe Belfiore. He's the other Joe. He's got me by about a syllable. I've got him by about 6 inches. That's how you can tell us apart. How many of you guys went to the keynote this morning? Good, almost everybody. Awesome. Wow, you guys are brave souls. That's an early keynote for being in Vegas. What I'm going to do, I'm a PM on IE for Windows Phone. I actually look after the web developer platform for Windows Phone. The browser demo stuff that Joe showed this morning, that's what I and my team work on. In this morning's session, I'm going to talk about building mobile websites. Even though the marketing people maybe put IE9 and Windows Phone 7 on the slides, the stuff I'm going to talk about is actually pretty universal to mobile web development. I'll start off in the first half. We'll talk a little bit about building mobile web content, and then we'll talk about how we built IE9 for the phone. I'll go into details around IE9 on the phone, and I have some demos above and beyond what Joe showed this morning. Let's just go ahead and just get right into it. How many people are doing mobile web development today? Okay, most of you. That's good. All right. We certainly have come a long way in mobile web development, right? Who remembers this? Yeah. That was the mobile web, not even, what, 5 years ago? Had this to go along with it, right? Good old WML, right? I'm sorry if I'm causing any painful flashbacks, but this was the mobile web not too long ago, and from that to that is quite the leap. We have really great screens today. We have real XHTML. We have real HTML5 now. It's been a great journey, and as a result of the improvements that have been made in mobile browsing, this is a study that was commissioned by a company called Zocomm just last year. The browser is actually now the number one application in terms of total face time, and if you analyze the mobile traffic on a typical phone, the browser accounts usually for more than half of it. If you take a look at a chart, this chart shows how many monthly users as a percentage use certain applications, and then the y-axis is the data traffic, the face time that they spend in the application. And look who's high and right? The device web browser. It is the most commonly used app on the phone. And like I said before, it accounts for, if you look at data traffic volume, the browser typically accounts for more than half. The mobile web is here. It's huge. People are really using it. Now with modern technologies like HTML5, you can build real apps. If you look at what's really going to be exciting as we go forward, we finally have this device that we carry around with us in our hands that knows a lot about the world around it, right? Today's phones are full of stuff, right? Phones know what time it is. They know where they are. They know whether it's night or day or you're inside or outside. Phones know if they're moving around. They know what direction they're pointing in. Phones can hear things through the microphone. They can see things. They're just loaded with sensors, right? Today's phones know a lot about the real world around them. Now, you might be looking at this list and saying, "Well, wait a second. My web browser doesn't give me the compass or whatever." And that's true. Not all of these sensors are available to you just yet, right, as web developers. But that's changing. This study was conducted by a company called Global Intelligence Alliance. And the fact of the matter is that if you look at the state of where current web specs are, sometime around the next couple of years, most native device capabilities via the sensors will be enabled through HTML5, and that will allow you to build experiences that really rival native apps. Now, just to be clear, that timeline is not a promise. I'm not saying this is what IE9 is going to do, right? This was built as an illustrative purpose, looking at where specs currently are in the real world and how they're progressing, right? So the idea is that today we have geolocation. Some browsers are beginning to implement things like media capture and so on. But as we go forward, you'll get all these great capabilities. So the kinds of experiences you'll be able to build in the mobile web will rival that of native apps. So then you might ask yourself, okay, well, why would I build a native app then versus a website? So the mobile web content is really great for certain situations, right? It's really great for things where you have to do rapid iterated design, right? Or things like subscription-based content. If you have to reach a lot of people, the mobile web is great for that. It also provides a nice architectural advantage, being able to use the same markup across different browsers, using HTML5 and such, which usually results in substantial savings around things like QA. So I really think that over the next couple of years, we're going to see a real game-changing, a sea change in the kinds of things you can do on the phone, in the web. But in order to do that and do it well, you have to understand what it is that makes mobile different from being on the desktop.
Right.
If you ask most developers, like, well, what's different about the mobile web? They'll say, oh, the screen size is smaller. Yeah, that's true, right? But if you take a step back and you think about it, there's two ways you can break the differences down. There are, in fact, physical differences among devices, right? If you look at desktop computers, and even laptops for some part, you got a nice big full keyboard, right? You've got these nice hyper-accurate pointing devices, whether they're a mouse or a tablet or, you know, the telepathic haptic interface, whatever. You know, you can really point accurately. You've got big screens, usually multiple monitors. How many people have multiple monitors on their? Yeah, see, that's common these days, right? You've got a nice big honking CPU, nice big GPU, got nice big storage devices. The physical characteristics of mobile devices are obviously not as capable, right? You've got a limited keyboard if it slides out. Sometimes you don't have that. Sometimes you have like a virtual on-the-screen keyboard, right? You've got this, you know, nice finger-pointing device, which is big, well, mine are big. You've got a smaller screen. You've got GPUs and CPUs that aren't as capable. Those are the physical differences, but those give rise to experience differences. Desktops and even laptops are typically used from fixed, fairly predictable locations, right? I mean, even when you're using a laptop, you're usually sitting down somewhere or you're on it, you know, you're not typically walking around the street with your laptop out and typing, right, like you are with a phone. This leads to experiences that are good for things like open-ended web browsing, right? You got nice big monitors so you can easily switch among multiple tasks. So I can have my spreadsheet open over here, I can have my email open over here, right? And I can, while one thing is doing something, I can switch to another window. The user is typically more focused, more comfortable with their surroundings. Phones are typically used in environments that are on the go, right? Mobile web users are typically just that, they're mobile. So phones are typically more used for things like quick, you know, glanceable information. The user is focused typically on an individual discrete task right there in the moment. And usually when they're using their mobile device, they're not necessarily focused. They might be distracted, right? Like if I'm using the web on the phone, I'm at a bar with my friends, I might be looking up some fact on Wikipedia to settle an argument, or I might be transferring money from savings to checking to pay the bar bill, whatever, right? It's an adjunct to what I'm currently doing. It's not necessarily the focus of what I'm doing. So those are important experience differences to keep in mind as you build apps, not just web apps, but apps in general. And then because of those differences, mobile web users have different expectations than desktop users. They expect immediate access to important information, right? You don't want to have to wait for your phone to boot and then go launch an app and then go find data. You want to be able to get immediate access to stuff. They expect information to be augmented by the real world, things like time and place, things like where they are, right? In the future, other sensors will provide that. The environmental conditions can vary pretty widely, right? Lighting might be different. I might be using my phone in the back of a taxi and I'm going in and out of tunnels or shadows, or I might be in a dimly lit room. I might be outside in the bright sun, right? So that affects how people consume information. The network speed might be different. And then finally, you know, the user's surroundings immediately around them also influence how they use their device to get information. So for example, you know, if I'm on a crowded bus and I have the need to access my my mobile banking site, for example, I might think twice about that if my mobile bank happens to just dump me into a pretty sensitive screen when I first log on, right? Like my bank balance and my account number. So taking things like that into account, you can say, well, maybe I should design a UI or an experience that gives the user the option of where they want to go when they log in, right? Maybe don't go straight to the balance, you know, screen. Go to some other less, you know, less sensitive piece of data. So these give rise to challenges. Another challenge, of course, is that the diversity among mobile browsers in the market is pretty large, right? This chart shows. I snapped this like last week before I came here, and you know this. I mean, compared to the Garden of Eden that is the mobile desktop, right? Relatively speaking, where you've got IE, you've got Firefox, and everybody else. This is mayhem, right? I mean, look at the monthly changes. I mean, Opera is still. This is global, by the way. So you got the red line is Opera. They're doing pretty well, right? Android's doing. You know, they came out of nowhere. They're doing a great job. BlackBerry was doing pretty good, but now they're going back down again, right? Nokia was doing really great. They went down, up, now they're coming back up. So, you know, browsers are changing in the mobile space all the time. I mean, even browsers that supposedly use WebKit, right? There's multiple versions of WebKit out there. And the Quirks Mode guy, PPK, did a great post on that about what the differences are among even same rendering engines. So these all present challenges that you have to consider when you're building mobile websites. All right, so I've laid out a lot of problems. Let's talk about some solutions. So how do we go about this? Well, first, and this should go without saying, you have to use well-defined web standards, right? Once you decided the standards you're going to use, whether it's HTML 5 or XHTML 1 or mobile profile or whatever, you're going to have to decide on how you get your content adapted for the mobile form factor. Do you use the same page? Do you start from scratch? You know, do you create mobile tailored forms and stuff? You can add HTML5 features because one of the ironic things about phones is that because most of them have newer browsers, even though they're less capable devices, the browsers are pretty modern, right? We don't have the IE6 problem on phones today, right? So that things like that just don't exist. You might want to consider using a mobile framework. There's good ones out there like Sencha, like jQuery Mobile. Who's using jQuery today? Most of you. Wow. So yeah. So jQuery Mobile, they just shipped their alpha version of I think it's alpha 4 they're on now, which supports Windows Phone 7. I'm in contact with those guys a lot, and they're doing a great job. And then of course you got to test, right? Testing emulators are great for testing, but there's no substitute for real devices. So one of the principles I tell people to follow is design for one web, right? There is no such thing as the desktop web or the mobile web. There's just the web, and then there's ways we consume it, right? We consume it on the desktop, we consume it on the phone, we consume it on TVs, right? Whatever else in the future. So essentially, the guiding principle behind this is that people should be able to get to the same information, right, regardless of what device they're using, within reason. Now, notice I'm not saying you should give everybody the same appearance or the same experience, right? But there's no reason why I shouldn't be able to get sports scores, you know, on the phone that I'm using, right? That's information that should be available to me. I shouldn't have to have device X to be able to go to my bank, right? So don't exclude people necessarily just based on the class of device that they're using. This becomes a lot easier if you followed good design principles like separating your behavior from your content, right? You use HTML for markup, you use JavaScript for behavior, you use CSS for styling. If you follow that kind of design pattern, this job will be a lot easier. You can also do things like progressive enhancement and decide on tiers of devices, right? So one of the things you might say is, instead of detecting specific phones, right, you might say, okay, well, let me detect the features or capabilities that a phone has and put it into a class. This is the kind of approach that jQuery follows, right? They have class A browsers. Yahoo does this too. They have class B browsers. And then they tier their devices and then deliver an experience that works across that tier. Design for the finger. Don't design for the stylus. Okay. Now, I come not to bury stylus, but to praise him. Okay, stylus is fine. But the fact of the matter is that good finger-friendly design typically results in good stylus-friendly design as well. All right, styluses tend to be more accurate. They're great for like pixel, you know, selection and stuff. But fingers, well, one advantage of fingers is that you don't usually lose them, right? They're usually with you. The other thing is fingers just naturally are more capable of doing certain things, right? Fingers can flick, they can pan, they can make circles, they can make little infinity designs, they can pinch, they can zoom, they can do all kinds of stuff, right? So design for the finger, don't design for the stylus. Fingers typically tend to be about 40 to 80 pixels in size. Mine tend towards more 80 pixels in size. On Windows Phone 7, we tell people in our Metro guidelines, design for a minimum size of 7 millimeters, right? So that way, and space them accordingly. So that way there's no competition for hits for hitting. In IE9 on the phone, we detect things like what the zoom factor of the page is. So if a link on the page falls below a certain hit threshold, we will automatically scale that out for you. The thing is, if you put links too close together, that might sometimes result in link contention. Just be aware of that, though. But we do try to make things like that easier for people using the phone. So once again, design for finger, don't design for stylus. Another guideline principle is being crisp and clean and succinct. And so what I mean by this. So in mobile design, less is typically more. Don't go crazy with fonts and colors. Fewer fonts, fewer colors typically do things like dramatically increase readability. They increase the ability of the user to understand the information that they're looking at. If you look at Twitter, for example, one thing you notice on the Twitter page is they're not using background images, right? They're using fewer colors. Try to avoid doing stuff like gratuitous interactivity. Like you'll see this on restaurant sites all the time, right? You go to a restaurant site, they got some big flash intro. On a phone, all you're doing is keeping somebody from doing their work, right? So avoid that kind of stuff. Background images can make the pages hard to read, so be careful with those. When they shrink down and the pixels become more dense, images tend to be darker. So if you have text that's overlaid on the background image, that can become really hard to read. So avoid that, and it also increases download time. Remember to optimize content for the small screen space. You can scale down your images, do that, because some content delivery networks that are run by mobile operators will very helpfully do this for you if you don't do it. They'll detect things like, and this becomes a problem when you're using things like CSS image sprites. Some delivery networks will say, oh, that image is far larger than any mobile phone screen I've ever seen. Let me go ahead and helpfully scale that down for you. And then the content comes onto your phone, it looks all squished, and you're like, well, what's going on here? Use short titles, right, because the screen real estate on the top of the browser is typically, you know, crowded. Twitter taught us that you can say a lot in few characters, so use short titles. And use white space, but use it judiciously, right? I mean, you look at the Twitter page, there's a lot of white space on there, but it's used well. They've optimized for vertical scrolling, right, because you can use your thumb to easily scroll, right? So be crisp, clean, and succinct. If possible, minimize the amount of required input that a user has to do on the device. Now, people obviously can type. People send text messages all the time, right? There's billions of these things being sent around. But the thing about entering a lot of text on the phone is that it can very quickly become tiresome, and it can very quickly become error-prone. It requires, anytime the user has to type stuff, they've got to stop, right, focus on typing, and it increases, the more text you have to enter, the likelihood of errors goes up, right? I mean, it's one thing to send a whole bunch of misspelled words to your friend. You know, you can't do that with your bank account number, right? I mean, if you're transferring money, you want to make sure that you're transferring $200 and not $200,000, right? So, you know, those kinds of things can get out of hand really quickly. So only require the minimum amount of typing or information just to get the job done. And where possible, it helps to just provide sensible default values. So, for example, if I've got a movie site like you see here, and I give the user links to buy tickets to a movie, I probably shouldn't show purchasing links for times that have gone by that day already, right? I mean, that would be nonsensical. So you can use things like the clock, right, to see what time it is, and then just not show appropriate links if they don't make sense. And then once you've done this, once you've provided sensible default values, you've got the user input, remember it for next time, right? Use cookies, use local storage on the phone if the browser supports HTML5, which many do now, and save that information so the user has to do it next time, right? If they select a favorite theater or whatever, remember that. Another good principle of good mobile web app design is focus. Good mobile web apps focus on a few important tasks. They don't try to do everything. So resist the temptation, resist my grasshoppers, resist the temptation to just put every feature on your website on the phone, right? A good example of this is, say, like airline sites. In fact, I think I have an example. Let me just bring that up really quick. So here's United's site, right? And you can do a whole bunch of great stuff on United's site. You can like plan your vacation. You can see where they fly. They've got all kinds of maps, right? However, if I'm mobile and I'm in the back of a cab and I'm heading to the airport, and I may, you know, maybe tired from the night before, like I probably will be tomorrow morning. You know, what I'm really interested in is probably checking in and flight status, right? So here on this large page, all this information, these are the two things I really care most about. So if you look at the way that United has designed their mobile page, right, what's the top two features? Checking in and flight status, right? They've made it brain dead simple for me to just look, I can just blink and look at this and know what to do. So make sure the user doesn't have to scroll to get to the most important stuff. If they've got to scroll down, they may not realize they've got to do that. And it just causes them to have to do more work to get to the right stuff. So make the most obvious stuff a blink decision. The user should be able to say, oh, here's what I need to do. Use well-defined standards. Most modern browsers on phones today support really good web standards. At a minimum, you should be using things like XHTML1 or HTML4.0 or XHTML mobile profile. CSS2.1 is widely implemented along with DOM and ECMAScript 3. If the phone supports HTML5 and CSS3, you can certainly implement those features. There's really great tools to help you do this, things like Modernizer, which we're now shipping with our tool set. So use things like Modernizer. Always remember to specify a doc type. The doc type tells the browser what kind of page it's about to get. So and that might affect the rendering mode. So always make sure you specify a doc type for your pages. If you're going to use media types, use standard media types. That should go without saying. But also focus on avoiding things that cause known issues, even if they work. So for example, things like frame sets will work. Things like tables will work. So frame sets specifically, for example, take up a lot of room, right? Those little frame borders on a small screen, that gets really cumbersome really quickly. Using tables for layout, that's just a bad idea to begin with. You really should be using CSS. But the problem with tables is that they get really unwieldy really quickly. They bloat the code. They cause download time increase. So avoid stuff like that. Image maps, another great example. Image maps work. But the problem with image maps is that they're usually used in conjunction with some kind of rollover behavior, right? The user rolls the mouse over an image map, something lights up, and they know how to click on it. You don't have mouse over. You know, we don't have finger over on the phone, right? So avoid stuff like that. All right, so let's talk about adapting content to mobile. There's basically four ways you can look at this. The first approach is to just not do anything, right? You can choose to do nothing, in which case the desktop site just gets delivered to the phone. Now, in some cases, this works well. Blog sites, for example, right? WordPress looks pretty good on a phone when you zoom in on the column, and most phones are pretty simple. You just double tap on a page element and it zooms in nice. So if you've got a simple page that's just content and it flows and it follows a flowing box model, that might work. The next step up from there, though, is basic mobile adaptation. So this is content that's laid out so that it will at least look good on a mobile device. And you can control that using special meta tags, which I'll cover in a second. In multi-serving, what you're doing is you're sending the same page to multiple form factors, right? The desktop and the phone. But you're using things like CSS media queries to style it differently. And then lastly, there's mobile-specific design where the parts of your site are designed specifically to look good on mobile, and then you store them in a particular place, like m.dot folder or some other virtual directory. So let's take a quick look at the mobile meta tags. So pages that have been laid out specifically for mobile, there's a way to identify those as being mobile-ready. And there's three meta tags that have been developed over the years. The first one, handheld friendly, I think RIM came up with that one some years ago. It's the true false tag. The mobile optimized tag we actually came up with for Pocket PC back in the day. But the one that everybody uses now is viewport. And IE9 will recognize all three of these, and it'll do it in order of age. So if it sees handheld friendly but nothing else, it'll use it, right? But if your page has all three of these, it knows that viewport's the most modern one, and it'll use that instead. The great thing about the viewport is that the viewport lets you control how the page is laid out. So on this example, imagine those gray lines right there are the screen, and those barely visible orange lines are the content of the page. Those orange lines represent the viewport. So you can actually tell the browser, hey, here's how big my page should be. If you don't tell the browser how big the page is, it will make an assumption. On IE9, it assumes it's about 1,000 pixels wide. I think it's like 1,024. On iPhone, it's 980. On Android, I think it's 920. But most mobile browsers will assume about 1,000 pixels. So what does the viewport do? Well, it gives you a whole bunch of tags you can include in your page that say, here's how the viewport behaves when the user sees it. You can set the width, right, which is the most commonly used one. You can also set things like height, but that's calculated for you. In many cases, that's not going to be very useful. But you can also control things like scaling, right? You can control what the initial scale is. You can control what the min and max scale is. You can control whether the user can even scale stuff. So let me just give you a quick demo of what the viewport looks like. So here's a page that does not use the viewport. I've just got some content. No, I'm not a designer. It's got some content on there. It's got a div. It's got some scrolling content. It's got an image. But there's no viewport there. This is the version with the viewport. So when I tell the viewport, when I tell the browser, hey, the viewport is the device width, it knows how to lay the content out correctly. How am I doing on time? Good. I realize I'm standing between you and lunch, so. Okay. Designing mobile web forms. Mobile web forms are, you know, inherently you've got some constraints around these to begin with, right? There's the device screen. There's the input capabilities, the kind of keyboards you have. But you can do some things to make forms on mobile websites more usable and easier to use. First, use top-aligned form labels. I'll show you why in a second. Give the user options to do things like display their password while they're using their phone. Try to do things like minimizing typing. If you can give the user a selectable list, many modern browsers are optimized to provide a nice full screen selecting appearance for things like option lists. Use the new HTML form input types, because even if the browser doesn't support them, they will default back to the original input types. So let's take a look. All right. So why would you use top-aligned form fields? So consider an example where you've got a form and you've got the user with some input fields, right? The user puts the cursor in a field and it zooms in. It's like, okay, now, oh, wait, what field was I typing in again? So if you put them on top of each other, right, it avoids the problem of losing track of where you are on the page. And there's really easy ways to do this using CSS3. So for example, if you're using media queries, you can do things like just have a label on the form, and when it goes to a certain width, just have it display as an inline block rather than a block element, for example, right? That will just automatically cause things to go on the same line versus top aligned. So things like that can make this really easy. The nice thing about this is not just that they stay visible, but you don't need fancy layout code to make things look great, right? So you've optimized for vertical scrolling. The user doesn't have to, like, you know, scroll pan around. You don't have to have any complex layout code. It works whether you're going from left to right or right to left text in other languages. So that's a nice localization feature. Speaking of localization, when you translate the fields into other languages, if you do that, then you don't have to relay out the page, right? So when those form fields all get translated to German and they triple in size, right, you won't have to worry about relaying out the form. Password entry is another one. This is the typical password experience on many browsers. Some browsers are really cool, and they show you one character at a time while you're typing, right? Yeah, thanks. The problem is, I mean, when you're using your phone, right, typically, I don't know about you, but I'm usually using my phone like this, right, and I'm typing my password in. I'm not using my phone like this, showing everybody my password, right? The likelihood that there's some guy behind you, like, you know, trying to get your password, you know, that's really not very likely, right? So give the user the option of, like, saying, hey, I want to see the characters. Facebook actually does this, for example, right? The Facebook mobile site, if you go to the mobile site on Facebook and you mess up on your password, they'll just show it to you in plain text. All right, let's talk about multi-serving content. So I talked about this before. This is the same page And basically, you're sending it to two different form factors. There's the device form factor, there's the mobile form factor. Usually, this involves some kind of detection, including media queries, right? So there's different ways to do detection. You can do it on the client, or you can do it on the server. So on the client, you typically use script to detect the capabilities of the device, right? Does this device have Canvas? Does this device have this? Does this device have local storage, right? On the server, you can use code to detect the user agent string. I tend to tell people, don't try to avoid doing browser sniffing, because browser sniffing is inherently backwards looking. And it's hard to like keep that up. Plus, you know, given all the devices out there, you're inevitably gonna miss some. If you do have to use browser sniffing for a reason, don't roll your own. You could also make your own clothing, right? But no one does that, right? There's great things off the shelf. So things like the WRFL, the Wireless Uniform Resource File, which works with both PHP.NET, works with JSP. So use something like that. Avoid using things like script on the client to check the user agent, because that slows the user down, right? It's much better to do feature detection. Again, Modernizer helps out with this. And I'm getting a phone call on my live phone over here. Oh, sorry about that. I told you I was going to have demos. That's not one of them. Don't do things like user agent detection to work around bugs. I will personally come find you. Please don't do this. Okay? Use feature detection. Working around bugs, especially on mobile, you shouldn't have to do this. Okay, you should not have to do this. We don't have ASICs on the phone. And then finally, in the case of mobile-specific design, you can do a whole bunch of things here. IIS, for example, lets you do things like virtual directories. Typically, what you do is you build your page, you put it in like m.dot or you know your site slash m or whatever. This is where you get really more into UA detection. So if you're serving up mobile versions of your site with a mobile-specific pages, that's when you're getting more closely into things like detection. But again, try to avoid specific user agent detection. Just do things like tiering, right? Say, okay, this is a rich browser. I'll tier this one differently than I tier the others. And again, use WRFL. It's really good. All right. So I've reached a section now where I want to talk a little bit about engineering IE9 on mobile. So Dean talked about this in yesterday's keynote. Joe kind of went over it today. When we sat down to build IE9 on mobile, in addition to working directly with the IE9 team on desktop, we approached it the same way that they did. So there were four guiding principles. One was, let's enable HTML5 via the principle of same markup, right? We heard loud and clear, developers were coming to us saying, look, I'm tired of having to write different code to get my site to look good on different browsers. So we heard that loud and clear. We wanted to make sure that same markup. Now, to be clear, same markup does not mean you mark up your site on the desktop and it's going to automatically look great on mobile, right? It'll work, but that's not what same markup means. Same markup means across platforms, you should be able to use the same markup in different browsers. We also sat down and said, let's make this thing fast. You know, let's give IE transparent access, transparent to web developers. Let's give them access to the underlying hardware via GPU acceleration, right? Things like that. We also looked at how the browser UI, Chrome, was designed to see if we could do a better job of making sites the star of the show, right? I mean, if you think of like the browser as the stage and the sites as the actors, you really want that experience to come through. So we spent a lot of time and attention specifically on that in IE9. And then finally, we sat down and said, how can we make the browsing experience more safe, more trustworthy, right? How can we make sure that when people are browsing the web, whether it's on desktop or on mobile, they can feel secure while doing it? So that's what developers told us. They said, we want interoperability, we want same markup. So we delivered that via things like HTML5 Canvas, audio, video, things like SVG. We've got SVG support now in IE. A lot of the core DOM stuff that we did, CSS3 work that we did. So we went through and we looked at a lot of the specs that were out there and under HTML5, we'll get to that in a second, and chose to implement the ones that developers cared most about. We also implemented things for performance. So we took a holistic view of performance, not just raw speed, right? Yes, we did build a faster JavaScript engine. Yes, we did enable GPU acceleration. But we really took a holistic performance on things like scrolling speed and page caching and that kind of stuff as well. Developers said we want our websites to look more like applications, right? So we reduced the Chrome. We gave them access to the hardware. But we also did little detail things as well. If you look at the current browser on the first release of Windows Phone, things like form controls don't look like Metro controls, right? They have this like the old IE kind of 3D rendering look to them. So we sat down and said, that doesn't look right. Let's actually go back and make sure that when we do things as detailed as rendering controls, they actually look like Metro ones. And I'll show a demo of that. And then finally, under safe and trusted browsing, on the phone, we don't do stuff like ActiveX. We don't have browser helper objects. We don't have plugins. You don't have binary behaviors. A lot of the stuff that were causes of security issues in the past, we just simply didn't do on the phone. A, because we didn't need them. B, because we wanted it to be more secure. Another thing we did was we sat down and we looked at the way that today's sites are actually built, right? We built our own crawling tool, and this crawling tool went out across like the top, you know, 7,000-ish websites, and we said, what APIs are people actually using? Anybody want to guess like what the number one API used on JavaScript on the web is today? Oh, come on, don't be shy. I'll tell you what, if you take a guess, I promise I'll see to it you get free lunch today. Get element by ID is our first guess. It's a good guess. It's wrong. It actually, get element by ID does not even crack the top 10. Any other guesses? Free lunch. All right. No, a console, you'd think so. Actually, you know what it is? It's index of. When you think about all the text processing that happens on the web today, right, it turns out that string processing is one of the most common things people do. Right? They do it, they use it to validate form input. They manipulate all kinds of data using strings. So index of is actually the most common one. Get element by ID, number 13. This surprised me too. Well, it surprised all of us, but this is the kind of stuff that we learned when we built these tools to go out and see how the web is actually working today. So then we used this information to go back when we built our JavaScript engine and said, you know what, let's optimize around real scenarios that people are doing. So using data like this, we were able to focus on string performance. So HTML5 is a huge undertaking. How many people are using HTML5 features in their sites? Yeah, not many, but a few of you. I mean, how many people will be using it within the next 6 months? Yeah, so a lot more hands. So the thing with HTML5, and I've kind of condensed the slide around a bit. So this slide shows all of the specs that make up what the general public kind of thinks of HTML5 today, even though HTML5 is actually that box over there. This is kind of what most people think of when they think of HTML5. So the color coding reflects the process that specs go through in organizations like the W3C and the WatWG and so on. Basically, specs start out at life as a first public draft. That's the red color. Then they go into the working draft status, and that's where all the work gets done, right? Iterations. Assuming that process works out well, they then go to the gray status, which is last call. And last call is, you know, if anybody feels that this spec should not be implemented, please speak now or forever hold your peace. Then the candidate recommendation comes out. So the W3C says, all right, we think that this is now stable. It's no longer killing small children in the wild. We think it's ready to implement, right? So that's your cue as a browser vendor to say, okay, we can do this now. And then finally, they go to recommendation status, which is when they're enshrined. You know, they get their little jersey hanging ceremony, that kind of stuff. What's the first thing you notice about this chart? How little green there is, right? How much orange there is. A lot of the stuff that makes up HTML5 today is actually still a work in progress. In fact, most of the green stuff is under stuff like SVG, the scripting stuff, a lot of the DOM stuff. HTML, CSS, right? A lot of that stuff is still working drafts, so it's still a work in progress. So the way that we approach HTML5, and by the way, that list is not going to stay like that, right? 5 years from now, there's going to be another 50 specs up there. I'm sure of it, right? That's not a static list. The problem is that not all of these are site ready, right? Some of them are ready, like geolocation. Some of them, like WebSockets, are not. So the way that we approach this is we don't want to come into a situation where you've got incompatible implementations across browsers, or you know, you go and you build something and then the spec changes and, oh, now it's broken. So we want to avoid that kind of stuff. So the approach that we're taking, there's two main thrusts to this. First, our strategy is to provide implementations for stuff that we think is site ready today, right? A lot of the green and light green stuff you saw, some of the stuff that's in last call, if we think it's stable, we're going to focus on implementing that stuff first. On the desktop, we do things like platform previews for stuff that's still in development. We don't have the notion of platform previews yet on Windows Phone. What we do is when we ship the emulator, we put the browser in the emulator, and as we iterate over the emulator, you guys will get updates to the browser as they come along. And that's how we did the first release of Windows Phone 7 with the browser. We think we're going to do it that way again. We can't just simply give you IE9 builds right now because of the way Windows Phone works. The IE9 platform relies on a lot of the OS stuff that we're doing in Silverlight and the underlying OS. So unless you actually have Mango on your phone, and if you do, I want to talk to you. So because of the way we're doing that, we can't do the same kind of downloadable previews that we can just yet. In the future, I hope to be able to do that. In the future, I hope to be able to just give you guys platform previews once we have the OS at the same maturity level as as like the desktop, relatively speaking. So in the meantime, we do things like we provide plugins for specs that are still in development. So things like IndexedDB, things like WebSockets, right? If you go to html5labs.com, that's where we provide implementations for stuff that is not necessarily ready yet. And the reason we do this is to make it clear to developers that you shouldn't be shipping this stuff to your customers just yet, right? It's there for you to play with. It's there for you to test things out. But it's not there for you to actually use in your real sites just yet. All right. Let's take a look. Now, this slide is a partial summary of the stuff that we put into IE9 Mobile. It's not exhaustive, but it should give you a pretty good idea of what we did in the browser. So we implemented things like HTML5, Canvas, and video and audio, which you saw in the keynote today when Joe did the audio demo. That's one of the things that I worked on. I'm really glad it worked, actually. The SVG stuff, that's also in there now. We're working on things like accelerating this stuff now. A lot of the performance that you saw in today's keynote, that's just the base performance that we got by dint of using the existing CPU and GPU well. It's going to get even better from there because we're now really beginning to focus heads down on really accelerating our performance around things like graphics operations. So the demo that you saw the other day when Dean did that that manga SVG animation, right? Today that doesn't look so great on the phone, but it will, I mean, we will get much better performance than you see today. In the red category, that's a lot of the CSS3 stuff that we implemented. We just recently implemented 2D transforms in CSS3, which is a really great feature to have. Down below that in the black and gray boxes, that's kind of more the web application stuff that we did. I'm happy to announce that we actually did get geolocation into the browser, both on desktop and on mobile. I'm really happy that we were able to do that. We implemented things like data URIs. Now, in IE8, we actually had support for data URIs. The problem was they were limited to 32K, and so we removed that limit. So let's talk about the stuff that's key for mobile, though, right? So key for mobile is we minimized the Chrome. We did hardware-accelerated HTML5, which we talked about. The new Chakra JavaScript engine that the guys in IE9 built, we ported that over to the phone as well. The difference there is they get native JIT features on the desktop. So when the JavaScript engine compiles the code, it actually does JITing. We don't have that on the phone just yet, and I don't think that we're going to have it for Mango, but we're working on it. And then we talked about interoperability. In the previous iteration of Windows Phone, the viewport tag only supported a couple of properties like width, and I think it supported initial scale. We will support the full viewport tag in IE9 when it comes out. I mentioned support that we had support for geolocation. It does include GPS. And as web developers, you can, in your JavaScript code, indicate whether or not you want to use high accuracy when you're asking for location data. So the W3C API gives you the ability to say, I want location, or I want location with high accuracy. And high accuracy typically means use GPS. Now, the desktop version of IE9 does not have GPS capability in it, but we do. And the reason we give you the ability to ask for it specifically is because devices like GPS sensors typically use more battery power. So it's a way for you guys, when you're writing your mobile web apps, to if you want location and you don't need high accuracy, you can build it in a way that it doesn't consume more battery power. Full support for CSS media queries. Mostly you'll see media queries used for things like screen width or whatever. But if you actually take a look at the media query spec, they cover a lot of things. They cover things like orientation. They cover things like pixel density. We're supporting all of that. Okay, so if it's in the media query spec, we got it. HTML5 audio and video in full screen playback mode. We don't have inline playback yet. We're looking at it, but we don't have it just yet. I mentioned data URIs. How many people use data URIs in their sites? Anybody? So, yeah, a few people. If you don't know what they are, it's a way of specifying inside where you would normally put a URL. It's like, say, like an image, right? If you have like a logo for your website, you would normally say, you know, path to my logo dot whatever, right? A data URI is a way of taking that image, converting it to a base64 encoding, and then putting that right into the source code of the page where you would normally put a link to the image. The browser looks at that and converts it to an image on the fly. That way, you don't have to do an HTTP request to get the logo, for example, right? Now, in the old days, in IE8 and below, it was 32K of a limit. We took that off. You can now have data URIs as big as 4 gigabytes. So that limit is now gone. We're supporting DOM local storage and DOM session storage, HTML5 features that we put in. How many people are using that local storage today in their sites? Most of you. If you're not using it, the advantage these have over cookies, you should use local storage over cookies if you get a chance. And the reason is because cookies get sent to the server with every page request, right? So if you have cookies on the browse on the device, the page does a request to the server, the cookies go along with it. So it increases the payload. The other thing is, if you're using SSL, unless your entire site is SSL, those cookies get sent as clear text over the wire. So using DOM local storage is a much better solution for that. Then I want to just quickly talk about all the stuff that I talked about today up until now in IE9. We also make a browser control that you can embed in your native applications. And it's the same IE9 rendering engine in the browser control as we use on the desktop, right? Now, obviously, it's not the UI. It's not the Chrome UI. But it is the drawing surface. And all the benefits that you get, including geolocation, all that stuff, that will also work in the embeddable browser control. The nice thing about the embeddable browser control is that you can communicate to and from it in your managed code. So you can call from your managed code down into the script of the page by using the invoke script function. And you can also communicate back the other way as well. Your JavaScript can talk to the managed code using our window external notify. Now, the thing you have to realize is that we only pass strings back and forth. So you'll have to either, you know, JSONify or something else to your strings if you want to pass objects around. But that two-way communication is there. All right. So with that, let me switch over to my projector and show you guys some stuff that Joe did not show you today. Let me see. Yeah, let's bring it over here. And should probably turn the light on. Come on. There we go. Yeah. And we'll wait for it to focus. Maybe I'll turn the light off. No, doesn't seem. How many people are using, how many people access Facebook through the mobile web interface? Yeah, a lot of you, right? So Facebook is a great example of a company that made a huge investment in the mobile web as their app platform, right? They could have built apps for the various phones, but they didn't do that. They just invest. This is the most recent rollout that they did. They invested millions of dollars in just building a responsive website. And if you look at it, as I'm scrolling through here, first of all, it's pretty responsive, right? I mean, this is just IE9's performance on the phone. But also, they're following a lot of the same principles that I talked about earlier, right? Optimize for vertical scrolling, use the same fonts, don't go hog wild with background images and colors, things like that. So just a quick look at that site. Let me take a look at... So I mentioned earlier that we fixed our support for form controls in the browser. And let me just wait for that to focus. So In the old version of IE on Windows Phone, the form controls looked, they didn't look native to the platform, right? They looked like they looked at an IE 7 pretty much. So, but if you look at the way that we've done the controls now, and I'm sure how this is showing up with the projector, but they're much more minimal now. They're much more Metro-like. So when you use these controls in your page, they actually look more like Metro buttons and controls. You can also style these using CSS. So if you want to style controls in your page to look more native, you can do that as well. Let me show another demo. So here's one. This is just a simple CSS3 border radius demo. If you look at the demos that are available today on the test drive, we're working on porting those over so that you can play with them yourselves. And so this is just, you know, showing how our CSS3 support for things like border radius. Let me bring up the geolocation. So this is geolocation here. What I'm going to do is click this little locate me button, and if it works correctly, it'll show us at the Mandalay Bay. Yeah, it did. So there's geolocation in the browser. Let's see, what else do I want to show? Oh yeah, so we have support for SVG. Here's a really simple, this E was all built using SVG, and you can see that as I zoom in, right, it keeps the sharp edges because it's vector graphics. But probably a better demo to show that is this one here. This is a spider chart that was built using SVG, and you can see as I change the data sets, we have animation going back and forth. Okay, so that should give you an idea of the kinds of stuff that we've done in IE9 on the phone. I've got what looks like about 5-ish minutes left. So if you guys have questions, that's pretty much all the content I have for my presentation. And we've got mics. So first I want to say thank you for coming. I really appreciate it. And I'll take questions. Thanks, guys. Yeah, go ahead. Step right up.
I'm Jason Alderman from Synergy Systems. Hi. I was wondering if you're going to be supporting app caching.
Oh, you mean the HTML5 application
like
caching?
Like the cache manifest?
Yeah, not in the next release, no. We're looking at it, but we don't have it in Mango.
Okay, and are you planning to have web apps elevated in the same sense that they are on iPhone and Android?
Oh, you mean so like when you pin
so
them
that
to
you could
start,
pin them
yeah.
to?
We're looking at it. I don't think a firm decision has been made, but we are looking at it. So like you mean when you pin to start, you get the
Yes, and it Chrome, removes
yeah.
a lot of the
Not
browser
right
Chrome.
Not okay. right now.
Thank you.
Yeah. Other questions? All right, well, if you think of any, I'll be around throughout the conference. I'll also be here for a few more minutes. Go get the free lunch I promised, and I will see you guys later. Thanks.